Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on today's episodes, we look at the Champions League quarterfinal draw. What does this say about each team's chances for winning the competition? Then we open the burn book. While over on the paid side, we return to Tottenham. Just what is going on with Ange Postecoglou's men? Before I explain to Pete the mystery of Kate Middleton. That's all on this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for another two episodes of Unseen Incidents. Hello, Pete Dorman. How are you?
Hello, Patrick. I'm very well. Very well. A bit warm. It's currently 21 degrees in my office room. The heating kind of got away from me this evening. It's on a schedule.
Okay.
It's on the winter schedule. And it seems that the weather's finally getting a bit warmer. And now I'm regretting not paying more attention to my hive, but it's fine. I'm wearing a jumper as well. I can take that.
Yeah, I was going to say you are wearing two layers.
Yeah, I am wearing shorts underneath. I'm wearing, you can't see, it's off camera, but I'm wearing cord shorts and cord Birkenstocks.
Oh my god!
I'm an absolute
that's kind of a
for corduroy. It's an unintentional look, but I think you said this before that any look, intentional or unintentional, once you put Birkenstocks with it, it kind of starts to feel like a look.
Yeah.
Both good and bad, in good and bad ways. But yeah, I could see if somebody saw me wearing this, be like, that's a calculated look. It's not, but I'll take it. How are you?
I'm good. We're getting through it. Baby two is nearly 2 months now. So, you know, it's sort of countdown to life being like vaguely tolerable again.
At what stage does that usually happen? Is there a month where the baby's just like, yeah. when they leave the parental household?
Yeah. I would say normally in this third month, things start to pick up. So basically, there's been no change. Well, essentially, since she was born, there's like no change. Like they sleep and they eat and basically they kind of need to be fed every 3 hours. And if you're lucky, they sleep in between those feeds. And that's kind of how it is. And now we're getting to the point where some of the sleeps might get a bit longer. The feeds get a bit bigger. That's normally when you start to see that improvement. So I think it gets more tolerable. Then 4 months, they have a sleep regression. Like, so normally there's a little while where they like basically wake up every hour because they're learning. Their sleep kind of develops. Like they develop the ability to like have REM sleep and things at different stages, and they learn the ability to sort of stitch sleep cycles together, and so you have a terrible time then, and then after that usually you start to get improved sleep up to the point where they'll go through the night. So like after kind of 4 months you would expect to have a slightly better life.
Okay, so your
first 2 months are the worst. The first 2 months are the worst, and we're through those, and to be honest they haven't been that bad. Like Emma's done the lion's share because I've been kind of like on toddler duty and she's been kind of on newborn duty. But yeah, man, it's fun. And like the baby's getting cute now. She's got little chubby cheeks. She's getting little fat like thighs, which is kind of nice. So yeah, all good. Just in time for like the summer to come and me to be angry all the time.
Yeah. Well, like managing two little beings in like 36 degree heat, London heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm so angry when the temperature ticks up by a degree.
Yeah,
my propensity to blow up at strangers goes up by like 5%.
You're saying that you're concerned for your two young children and the heat that's going to come. But am I correct in saying that the very expensive Dyson fan that you bought to alleviate Coco from heat is actually only used in your bedroom?
No, I would use it in her room, but we bought an air conditioning unit last summer.
That's what's actually
going to be used
with the ice packs. That one,
we've got that one as well, but now I've got a proper aircon unit.
Right, okay. So you basically you're like Robert Dias. You're coming
I've invested like £1,000 in cooling technology. Like truly, I'm like it's like I'm building a fucking nuclear reactor.
Yeah,
I could keep it so cool. but also, we're hoping that in the new house, it'll be less of an issue. Like her old room just used to get sun pretty much the entire afternoon. And so it would just heat up until she went to bed. That won't be the case now. So we're kind of hoping that that will improve things as well. So No, in conclusion, it's very much about keeping her room cool.
Yeah.
But you've also got to keep it dark, and that's the problem. You've got to find a balance between those things, you see. So I don't know, man. We might just have to have everyone sleep in the same room, air conditioned.
Yeah.
Doesn't really feel worth it, does it? Might as well just die. Die of heat. All right. So today, the Champions League draw has happened. The quarterfinals are lined up.
Mm-hmm.
It is an insane draw, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless you are an idiot or like okay, a Barcelona fan, I think you have to accept that the four best teams in the competition are all on one side of the draw and the four weakest teams are on the other side. Like, statistically, Arsenal and Man City are the best teams left in the Champions League, you know, by the underlying stats.
Yeah.
Real Madrid, obviously in there as well, like one of the better teams in it, though technically their domestic number's worse than Barcelona's. But I think we all look at the talent and, you know, their kind of experience at this stage, and we all see, you know, a side who could do anyone. And then Bayern Munich, hard to gauge how good they are because they play in the Bundesliga, and the Bundesliga is terrible this year. But they have tons of talent. They've got a great manager who's won the competition before. While on the other side, PSG, basket case. Yeah. Barcelona, God knows, but Xavi, not a great manager. Atletico Madrid, pretty impressive in the last round. Dortmund, dog shit. So that's a brief, you know, if you just want to skip to the burn book now, we've basically covered it.
Yeah,
but of all these fixtures, is there one that catches your eye that you would most like to talk about? Because I think all of them are quite interesting.
I think all of them are interesting in different ways. And obviously with, you know, yeah. Should we start on the shit side first, for lack of a better?
Yeah, sure. Sounds great.
Okay, so what? Don't want to get them out of the way early. Atletico Dortmund. Thoughts?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. So I think Atleti. I think this is a real test of who actually watches football versus who has sort of legacy opinions about teams.
Yeah.
So people with Atleti, I think, still think of them as this like deep defending, low block, monstrous team,
mm-hmm.
best defensive side in the world. They're just going to grind you in the Champions League. And I think they probably can still do a version of that. They've got loads of the same players from that era. Simeone can obviously do it. But they aren't really that side anymore. Their defence is only okay now. Their defence is like fifth best in Spain. Well, their attack is third best. And 9 of the round of 16 teams had better defensive records after the round of 16. You know, by expected goals, than Atletico Madrid. 9 of them, which is nuts, bearing in mind a bunch of those went out. So Atleti, I think, are kind of weird, but they did play a really good Inter side, basically even, through two legs. And that gives me optimism about them. On the other hand, that defensive record that I was talking about, they came through a group with Feyenoord, Celtic and Lazio. Like, yeah, the first good team they played was Inter. And they got trounced to the first leg. They should have lost by more than one. And the second leg, they were good. But they've basically then had one good match against one good side in the tournament so far. And if you're going to play crap opposition, I think you should be insanely dominant. If you're going to play good opposition, you get a bit more leeway. So I don't know. I look at Atleti and I don't really see much that excites me, but they're up against the weakest team left in the competition. Do you not think?
I mean, I think this is kind of the two weakest teams in the competition have been drawn against each other. And if I'm either one of those teams, I'm like, this is literally the absolute best draw we can get. Because if I'm Atletico Madrid, I'm thinking, we basically need to beat... I think this Dortmund game will be not like an easy game for them, but I think they'll be able to manage Dortmund quite comfortably across two legs. You know, with Atletico also at home. As provided they don't go and ship a handful of goals or whatever in Germany, Atletico at home will be more than enough to deal with Dortmund. I think Atletico have lost one game at home this season and it happened literally on Sunday against Barcelona. So
3-0.
Bad. Yeah. But again, it's the first game they've lost at home this season. Like, it happens.
Sure.
But
they are in a crap league, Pete.
Yeah, but Barcelona...
They're not in as crap a league as Dortmund. Like, Dortmund are like... Dortmund are rated as the fifth best side in the Bundesliga by the numbers. And the Bundesliga fucking
Dortmund are kind of crap team in a crap league this season.
Yeah, which is not great. It's no, like...
So basically...
I don't know. Who's an analogous team to this?
Basically, I think Atletico Madrid should be able to manage that tie fairly comfortably. And then they're looking at literally we need to get past PSG or Barcelona, both of whom have huge problems, and we're in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely insane draw. And like you say, Atletico aren't without issue, but I just really don't see this going any other way, this particular tie, any other way than a fairly uneventful Atletico win. While they're not that same like defensive, like deep block side that they used to be, I think they're sensible enough and seemingly sensible enough to just to manage Dortmund out of this game. And I don't think either of these legs will be particularly interesting. But if Atletico go through like 3-1 on aggregate without much fanfare, I that's pretty much how I see that playing out. I really don't expect anything from Dortmund.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think might perplex people is, you know, again, some of the legacy stuff, like, oh, Dortmund, they used to be good. But also that Dortmund won that group with Milan, Newcastle and PSG, which does look impressive on paper.
Yeah.
They came through that group with a -2.6 expected goal difference. They were the only team to get through to the second round with a negative expected goal difference. And then they were outplayed by PSV across two legs.
Yeah.
Like, they were not good against PSV. And they have a mid-table defence in the Bundesliga. Let that sink in. A defence that rates in the middle of the Bundesliga, which this season is, like, the worst I've ever seen it. Like, the worst I've seen it since, like, 2010. And, you know, you look at their key attackers and you're like, okay, who are the guys who are in, like, double figures for them in the league this season? It's Daniel Malen, Nicolas Füllkrug, and Julian Brandt. That is not like we have the individual quality. Like, obviously, you could get hot. Your keeper has a great game. One of your forwards has a great game. And that can be enough to go through. But objectively, every other team left in the tournament has more top-end talent than that.
Yeah, and absolutely.
As much as I don't rate, like, Xavi, for example, there's no... Like, the managerial drop-off from the other coaches left in the tournament is also insane. So I just kind of don't really see... There's hope because, yeah, they are like up against a pretty mediocre Atleti team, like just a team that is not like impressive really in any way. But I just think that Atleti have got enough tactical flexibility, and their elite players, or their like big contributors, are Griezmann and Morata. I know people don't like Morata, but these two guys have actually played at the top level for a long time. And they kind of turned it on against Inter when they needed to. Like, they were able to put up, I think, nearly 3xG in that game against a really good Inter Milan team. Those guys have got 12 goals and assists between them in the Champions League. I just think when we talk about Dortmund getting past another team which is not that good, we're already talking about them getting lucky. So even if Dortmund get through that game, I just don't see how you get lucky and get lucky again. Like, Dortmund to me are...
They're lucky to be where they are now. Like, they're incredibly lucky to be where they are now. And like you said, it was, like, reasonably impressive that they topped a very, very tricky group with, like, four genuinely decent teams in it. But often what happens in groups like that is each team often takes points off each other. And all of a sudden you get an incredibly close group where a team kind of just got a good result on one night. And all of a sudden they've leapfrogged from third to first. Like, that was a pretty congested group. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Dortmund and... Sorry, Atletico and... Who was the other? Milan? No, was it Milan?
Yeah, Milan.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they finished in the same points. Pretty sure they had like 8 points each. And then Dortmund, well, whatever they had. But yeah, like, I think Dortmund are incredibly lucky to be where they are. Like you said, they were outplayed by PSV in the last round. If they get through Atletico, which they totally could because Atletico are the second worst team left. They totally could, but I don't see it. Even if they do, they won't get past PSG or Barcelona. Even though PSG and Barcelona are also a bit of a shit show. They're just a far more cohesive and better shit show than Dortmund are.
Exactly. And I think, like, this is the thing. Like, I put this in the script, but I was like, I am generally not a person who's like, know-how. Like, it really counts for something in the Champions League. You know, the way that everybody is like, well, Real Madrid could have, like, the worst stats in Europe, but when they get to the semi-final of the Champions League, they're going to turn it on. I'm a bit of a denier of that stuff, really.
Sure.
Not in this game. In this game, I'm like, this is a not very good, fairly naive Dortmund team. They are up against a coach who has done this so many times, players who've done this a lot, and who can just, like, just crunch you. I just think, like, if Atleti can play on the break and get into transition, they are able to do that. If they just want to dominate possession, I think they could probably do it against this Dortmund side as well. If they want to play deep block, I think they can do that and like break the game up with little fouls. I think they've got a lot of clubs in their bag, and I just think Dortmund are like, can we break on you? If we can't break on you, we don't really have much.
I see like a dozen ways that Atletico can beat Dortmund. I see pretty much one way Dortmund can beat Atletico legitimately, and outside of that, it's just pure dumb luck.
Yes, agreed. All right, so shall we move on to the next one? Do you want to stay on the shit side or transfer to the good side?
Well, let's stay on the shit side just because it's directly below the game we have. It's in my eye line. So the rounding out the shit side are PSG, Barcelona, and for me, PSG are probably the big winners, definitely the big winners of this draw. Because I think before the draw, they were like third or fourth, most likely to win the Champions League as per like Optus predictions. They're now second. They're above Arsenal. They're above Real Madrid, behind City.
Really?
That is the big... So basically, everybody on the
bookies really don't rate Barcelona then?
So I think Barcelona are like fifth favourites. Barcelona and Arsenal are really close. I think they both have about like a... something like a 10% chance of winning the Champions League.
That's kind of funny given the draws that they both face. Jesus. Yeah.
So really, it really shows the kind of disparity between the two sides of the draw. And if you're PSG, you're thinking, right, okay, Barcelona, I think we're going into this as favourites, and then we are definite favourites against whoever we face afterwards. So as long as we don't have a seismic fuck-up, we have a pretty comfortable walk to the final. And then, okay, sure, you'll probably come up against one of, like, I would say, Real Madrid, City, or Arsenal. But it's one night, it's a one-off. Anything happens in finals. So if I was PSG, I'd be pretty happy. And in terms of this game, one of the big mitigating factors for me is just, and this isn't, like, groundbreaking to say, but it is just Kylian Mbappe. He is an absolute powerhouse. Like, if you look at his stats, he is top five in the Champions League this season for so many attacking metrics, like expected goals, expected assists, shots on target, chances created, take-ons, shot and carries. Like literally any metric, if you go onto Optus Stats Hub and go to players and search and filter high to low on any attacking metric, Kylian Mbappe is pretty much in the top five. And he has the highest non-penalty expected goals and assists in the Champions League this season. Like he is just the best player in the world. And that's kind of it. So part of this tie is if he turns it on, it's going to be really difficult for any team to manage. And I think there is a lot of weight in that, but there are some holes with PSG, some significant holes. And I never put too much weight on PSG's like domestic numbers because Liga is fairly rubbish. But as expected, they're leading the league in a ton of attacking metrics. But their defence is actually pretty shaky. So they've got a third best defence in Liga. They've conceded 23 goals. Brest and Nice have conceded 20 each. So they're top two. But their expected goals against is like 32, which is seventh best in the league. They're giving up nearly 12 shots a game, again seventh. Four of those shots are on target, which is about eighth in the league. This is in Ligue 1. This is PSG in Ligue 1, whose underlying numbers are like truly, it's kind of similar to Dortmund's, truly middling defensively in a fucking weak league. Now, in the Champions League, they've been a bit tighter. They're giving up like eight, they've given up like eight expected goals, which I think is the third best of any of the teams left. So it's like one goal a game, pretty much expected against them. But while that is more respectable, they're still giving up nearly 12 shots per 90, which is like 10th for all of the teams that have played in the Champions League this season. So my biggest issue with PSG is while they have Mbappe and while they have this amazing world-class forward, they're giving up big chances and regular chances to teams that aren't very good domestically. And they're continuing to give those chances up in the Champions League. Granted, their XG against has been lower, which would indicate that the chances they're giving up in the Champions League aren't quite as good quality. But the volume is still there. And when you get to the business end of Champions League knockout stages, the teams get better, the players get more lethal. And if you're giving 12 shots up against a middling Ligue 1 team, that's going to be like 16 shots against a City or an Arsenal. That's going to be goals. You're going to be giving away goals just by giving up so many chances. Like you cannot give these teams like that amount of chances. And that is one of the main concerns I have about this matchup. And just how, because I mean Barcelona aren't amazing defensively, but I look at PSG and I'm thinking if you're struggling to contain oppositions and struggling to stop them from getting shots away and shots on target. In Ligue 1, as soon as you come up against a properly good side in the knockout stages over two legs, that's going to come back and bite.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. If your defence is basically kind of bend but don't break, like we're good enough, I think you're absolutely right. Like, you come up against Man City and they're just going to be like, great, thanks for the 20 shots that you gave us in this game. But, and also interestingly, you know, I looked it up then while you were talking, and their defence actually got worse over the course of the season. Like, until the end of November, they had the fifth best defence in Ligue 1 by XG against. Since the end of November, they've got the fifth worst defence in Ligue 1 by XG against. So I don't really know what's going on there. I mean, the other question is like, how... It's not necessarily going to matter. I'm not saying that he's just like not going to do anything, but how motivated is Mbappe? Like, Mbappe, they've been obviously taking him off in some league games, and Luis Enrique has been saying we need to get used to playing without him, but like, he's going to Madrid in the summer. Obviously, he's going to try and win. He's going to try and win the Champions League. He's going to want to win the Champions League, but it's not like, to my mind, it's not like the way that you'd expect. You're going to expect someone like Harry Kane, okay, to be playing like his life depends on it. In these knockout stages. Like, this is his opportunity. Like, they're probably not going to win the league. He's gone to a team where everyone was like, so well, he can't fail to win the league, and he's not won the league. So Kane is going to be like, this is a huge trophy that I have a chance to win. And as much as I'm sure Kane thinks he's going to age really, really well, he must know his career is not going to go on forever. And he's been unbelievable this season. And he's got Arsenal, you know, where he always scores against Arsenal. And City, like, he's also always scored against City. He's going to be like, I am going to do it. Like, I want to do these teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mbappe, I'm just not sure, is going to have that same, like, everything drive. Comes down to this game.
Well, no, because he's going to go to Madrid and win it.
Exactly. Like, probably next year. So again, I'm not saying this matters too much, because I don't think Barcelona have a particularly good defense. Like, their numbers domestically are by far the best in La Liga. They're better than Real Madrid's, significantly better. Yeah. Though at the same time, I would say, well, Real Madrid's issue, insofar as their squad has an issue, that their defense hasn't been great, is that like they are playing kind of a midfielder as a striker in Bellingham. Like, they've got a three-man attack, and one of those guys is a midfielder. Now, Bellingham's been phenomenal, but it's not quite the same as having like an actually elite centre forward, which is one of the reasons they're trying to get Mbappe to play up front with their other guys. I think that actually lends itself quite well to the Champions League. Like, because if they want to play defensive football, Ancelotti should be able to play amazing defensive football with the talent he has available to him and hitting Man City on the break. Whereas Barcelona, I just think like, you know, Romeu's been getting meaningful minutes in defence and midfield, and the defence itself is like not spectacular. And I just sort of look at those players and I think
they have a lot of injuries.
They're going to be up against Mbappe and Ousmane Dembele, who I rate really, really highly. And it is just like a chaos merchant. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Xavi wants to play really boring, conservative football where everything is predictable. Like, he hates chaos, basically. That's why his team's so fucking dull to watch. Like, but you cannot control what Mbappe and Dembele are going to do. Like, they are chaotic. And on top of that, they are also incredibly talented. I just think that extra bit of stardust probably gets it done. I also think that despite the fact that Barcelona have been more effective, you know, these numbers you've got in here are really interesting, that they forced the second most high turnovers in the Champions League this season. They've taken the most shots from high turnovers. Their press is way more effective than PSG's, even though PSG push up and press harder. PSG are way worse at turning it into possession regains and into opportunities. That's very interesting to me. I also do just think Luis Enrique is a better manager than Xavi. And as much as I think part of it with him as well has been that Luis Enrique has been mixing and matching talent and trying to figure out what this team is going to look like going forward, especially when Mbappe goes.
Yeah.
Xavi doesn't really have that issue. He can just sort of play who he wants, including kids.
Well, he's going to have to play
that,
kids.
Like, next season is somebody else's problem. Well, yeah. Fortunately, the kids are amazing. So, like, you know, it's not a disaster.
That's one of the kind of more interesting parts about the tie, is that obviously the kind of stardust that PSG have, particularly attacking stardust, it will be coming up against at least a back two in centre backs of Araujo and probably a 17-year-old Cubarsí, who, while he started the last five games, he has been incredibly, well, at least for the last two games, and Atleti and Napoli has been fantastic. He is still a 17-year-old kid playing centre back in the knockout stages of the Champions League. There is only against so much you can ask and expect him. Yes, against the best attacking player in the world. There's only so much you can expect and ask of him. Like, he has been great. He was great against Napoli. He was great. You know, he dealt with like the Griezmann, Depay, Morata, Atleti in that game where they won 3-0. And I don't think Atleti didn't register their first. This is at Atleti as well. Hadn't lost a game at home all season. Lost 3-0 to Barca, who had 2 17-year-olds in their back four, one of which was a right back playing left back. And Atletico Madrid didn't register their first shot on target until the 51st minute when they were 2-0 down. So I think credit where credit's due. Like, this 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid seems like he could be an amazing player, genuinely amazing player. And who is shocked that La Masia has produced another incredible talent? But he's 17, and he's going to come up in the Champions League quarterfinals over two legs against Mbappe.
Yeah.
He could do fine. He could do fine, but unfortunately, fine is not good enough at this stage. And I feel that it's going to be too much of an ask for him, which is completely understandable because he's a literal child. But basically, like, Christensen's injured now as well, so Xavi doesn't really have another option. Not that he would drop him, because I kind of think his form recently has deserved him to start. But also, Xavi's like, this is a free toss. I'm leaving at the end of the season. If we go out, we go out. Like, if I can play the kids, let them play. So I think basically for me, this kind of comes down to two big things. One, how Mbappe is dealt with by Haruhu and Kubarasi. And I think that is, one, a huge ask on Kubarasi, and two, because Kubarasi is so young, puts a huge amount of pressure and responsibility on Haruhu. And that's a difficult night anyway, even if you have like a peak 27-year-old centre-back beside you. You've got a 17-year-old that you're going to have to manage through that game as well. How that plays out, I think, will be really telling. And also, the fact that PSG have been leaking so many shots, like I said earlier in the show, how often can Barca get Lewandowski to be taking those shots? Because Lewandowski's kind of struggled to take shots in the Champions League so far this season. I think he's averaging like 2.5 per 90, which is way below the likes of like Mbappe, who's on like 4.5, and Haaland's on like nearly 6. Mm-hmm. So obviously Lewandowski is a great player. He had a phenomenal, phenomenal season last year. He's had a pretty decent season this season, but basically he's not really getting that many shots off. He's not getting that many shots on target. PSG give up a lot of shots. If Barca can get Lewandowski a good bulk of shots, more than he's been able to manufacture, they've been able to manufacture for him across the season so far, that could also help Barca swing that tie. With their better press, with PSG's defensive frailty, I can see Lewandowski getting a handful of big chances, and he's good enough to finish them. And in a tournament as competitive and as you know, difficult as the Champions League later stages, sometimes quality finishing in big moments is all you need. So I'm kind of bullish on Barca. A little bit. I would not be shocked if they. I think over two legs, it might be the killer for Barca. The fact, I see PSG over two legs, but I wouldn't be shocked if Barca had a little something there.
It also depends who's fit for Barca.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you know, Gavi out for the season, but like, is Pedri going to be fit? De Jong? Like, I assume they are going to be.
I assume they weren't going to be.
If they're not going to be, then I think that's a serious problem.
Mm.
Like, I just don't know. It. Like, your thing of, like, can they get chances for Lewandowski? It's like, yeah, can they do that? Like, I actually don't know. Maybe they can. Like, maybe, like, Cancelo does something amazing or like,
Firmino
Lopez
been
all right something
in the past few games. Firmino Lopez has been pretty
decent. Like, loads of these guys are all right. Like, Firmino Lopez's numbers are unbelievable. He's got 3 goals in his last 5 appearances. He's at nearly, like, 1 non-penalty expected goal and assist per 90 minutes, which is, you know, bananas. But I just think, like, PSG should be able to cope with that. Like, he is still, like...
They should.
A child. Like, all these guys are children.
Yeah, Lamine Yamal's 16.
And it's also reliant... And it's not just about them creating those chances. It's also about whether the kids at the other end can contain PSG. Like, as in, if this ends up...
I think that is a bit... That's a bigger,
end,
that's a bigger question.
Because if this ends up in an end-to-end question. Match, like just a shootout, like end-to-end match... PSG should win.
Yeah.
Like, PSG just have the power to, like, break and break and break again. And Lewandowski is, like, a better finisher, like, I guess, than anybody on the pitch. But, like, PSG can just... should be able to get, like, 2 attacks for every Barca attack, honestly. If it's a difficult, conservative, grindy game, then that's a little bit more interesting. If it comes down to 1 or 2 chances, then you're kind of unsure. And that's the kind of game that Xavi's going to try and create. To me, there are 2 games... of this quarterfinal stage that I find quite easy to predict, then this one I think is the hardest to predict. And then the Arsenal-Bayern one, I kind of either think it's very, very hard to predict or it's an easy win for Arsenal, you know?
Yeah.
As in, I don't think, there's nothing there that makes me think Bayern are just going to slap Arsenal. Whereas if, say, the Bundesliga is crap, Arsenal could feasibly slap Bayern. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that that's also like a difficult game to predict. But this game, I truly have no idea what's going to happen. Because, yeah, PSG's numbers in the Champions League, PSG have been better in the Champions League than they've been in the league, arguably.
Oh, no, definitely. Well, at least defensively.
Whereas Barca, you know, obviously the other way around. So I don't know. I mean, that said, the Napoli thing is like fairly impressive. PSG are favoured.
Yeah.
I think I favour PSG too. You know, Barcelona also looked really good last year and then like got dumped out of the Europa like pretty embarrassingly. I don't know. I'm going to go PSG, but it is narrow. It is narrow.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think PSG are most likely to go through. And I think just across two legs, they'll just have enough to get by Barcelona. But
yeah,
if they don't, I wouldn't be shocked. Wouldn't be massively shocked.
And I think we both agree. I imagine we both agree that maybe you feel differently. But I was going to say whoever goes through this should then be expecting to get to the final.
Fully agree.
Because unless Atleti just find another gear.
In the same way we said that Atletico and Dortmund were the two worst teams in the draw, PSG and Barcelona are the third and fourth worst teams in the draw.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
like, and when we say this, by the way, this isn't just like that you can look at a chart of like their expected goal difference, and it's like here in the top right corner where the elite teams are mm-hmm. like Arsenal, City, Bayern, and Real Madrid, and here in the bottom left corner are Dortmund and Atleti,
yeah,
and kind of in the middle, but more towards the bottom left are PSG and Barcelona. Like that, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So if a team from this side of the draw ends up winning, it will be quite funny. And also, like, you know, shit like that happens in the Champions League because it's one team from this side of the draw is going to have 90 minutes to try and win the Champions League.
Yeah,
and,
that's what's mental.
Arsenal lost to Porto, Bayern lost to Lazio. Like, this stuff does happen. So even Real Madrid got given a pretty good game by RB Leipzig. Where should we move on to next then?
Well, you've already started to touch on Arsenal-Bayern, so should we go there and then finish with what could have, which maybe should have been the final. That a lot of people saying that the PSG or the Madrid City draw should have been the final. So let's see if that for last.
Okay. So we're on to Arsenal-Bayern then.
Arsenal-Bayern.
So this one's kind of interesting. Arsenal had a pretty bad round of 16, basically even with Porto over two legs. Obviously beat them on penalties. On the other hand, defence still been impregnable. Like basically nobody can lay a glove on them at the moment. Like while Porto looked quite dangerous on the break, that didn't actually translate into big chances. And while Arsenal only created one real chance over the two legs, they only gave up one real chance, which was the one in the first leg that then didn't get scored. So from that point of view, they're quite well set up for the Champions League, as we've said all along. And they played very conservatively, you know, so they obviously ran out four centre-backs in the second leg, plus Rice and Jorginho. In the first leg, they took 19% of touches in the final third. I looked at it and I was like, that seems low to me. And I looked at their home game against Liverpool in the Premier League. They took 28% of their touches in the final third there
mm-hmm.
against way better opposition.
Way better.
So that shows, I think, that like both that they didn't play very well, but you're also scared. That Arteta was playing, was like, we just have to not lose. And I think Arteta has been kind of shit scared in the Champions League. In that second leg, you were like, you know what they need in this game? They need Zinchenko. And I think he was really scared to throw on Zinchenko because he was like, okay, we can pass the ball better. We can possess the ball better.
But we're defensively less
but
stable.
They keep running at us down the wings. And Kivior had been good. And I think he was like, oh shit, if I put him on, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
So the question would normally be, can they attack as well as they've been attacking in like the Prem without giving up too much defensively? And that's interesting against Bayern because Bayern obviously have got a good attack. What Bayern aren't going to do is like break up the game, make it bitty, loads of little fouls and stuff like Porto did. And so it'll basically be like Arsenal going up against an elite side, like against Liverpool or against like Manchester City in theory.
Yeah, I agree.
And their defence has been very good against those teams this season. So if the defence continues to be good, I kind of think they'll get chances at the other end. But the real issue here is like, how fucking good are Bayern? Like, no one knows.
No idea.
Their numbers are, like, if you look at expected goal difference per 90, which obviously is like that one stat we use generally to like measure how good a team is, the top teams in Europe, Europe's top five leagues, number one is Bayern and number two is Arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, but Bayern are playing in the Bundesliga.
And 10 you're like, points off well, top.
Yeah, and you're just like, well, but how good is it? Like I actually don't know.
Yeah.
Like, they've obviously been annihilating teams this season, but Harry Kane, as good as he is, was not scoring 31 goals in 26 games in the Premier League last season. Like, you do have to say, this competition is a bit worse. And as good as he's been in the Champions League as well, you still say, well, their attack has been good, but they've kind of given up quite a lot as well. Like, they gave up 2 XG across the two games to Lazio. 2 XG in total, so 1 XG a game. It's not crazy, but like, Lazio are rubbish, and you'd expect Bayern to kill them.
But also,
and while Arsenal's, you know, going through doesn't look like, looks even less impressive than Bayern going through against Lazio, Arsenal's defence was much better against Porto over those two legs than Bayern's was against Lazio, even if Bayern's attack was better.
Yeah, and I think Bayern, from being in the group with United and Copenhagen, they did not look good. Like, they gave up loads of chances, they gave up loads of goals. Like, and not it wasn't good. They weren't good goals to give up. It wasn't like, oh, that team's carved out a really good chance and finished it well. It was like, this is chaos. They've broken and the balls just end up in the net. Great. And that's happened like two or three times across the last two games that I've watched Bayern play in the Champions League. So I find it really difficult to make heads or tails of what Bayern are, because you look at their kind of components and you think, okay, this is like, there's some really decent components in here and this could be a really, really good team. And then you watch them play and you're like, this doesn't seem like what played out in my head when I read like the team sheet. And I also think in many ways this game lends itself better to Arsenal than it lends to Bayern. Lends itself better to Arsenal than the Porto game did. Because, like you said, I think Arteta was shit scared of losing to Porto. He was like, as long as we don't lose, we'll be fine. We can do them across two legs. I think the Bayern game will be a much more like standard game of top football. And if Arsenal lose to Bayern in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, I don't think anybody will deem that as a failure. Because again, because you have that whole like the historic football viewpoint of like, oh, they're Bayern Munich, of course they're going to be good. They've got Harry Kane scoring dozens of goals for fun.
Yeah.
Whereas if they went out against Porto, you'd be like, bottle job. So I think the fear of failure is much, much less against Bayern than it is against Porto. But in many ways, that'll free Arteta up and Arsenal up to play like the way they have played this season in the Premier League, largely without fear, because they're kind of coming from a position of there's some expectation, but the majority of people still expect City to go on and win the league. So in many ways, they're kind of like underdogs here or there, whereas in a lot of these games in the Champions League up until this point, they've been the favourites. And I think it's been a little bit of an uncomfortable reality for them to, and an uncomfortable like adjustment to make. And I think, I reckon probably like the viewer, like the layman, would be split on who's favourite in this. But for me, I think that's largely because of like the historic view of Bayern and Champions League notoriety, etc. But for me, I have Arsenal as pretty reasonable favourites for me.
I have Arsenal as favourites too. It's fairly marginal.
You think? I think...
But I do think I find it easier, unless Bayern have a game, you know, where just everything goes in, which is totally possible.
Yeah, but they have to have two games, I got.
I think it's fairly evenly matched, but I do think a scenario in which Arsenal blow Bayern away is more likely than a scenario in which Bayern blow Arsenal away. Even though I think the teams overall, I give their probability of winning like about the same, like they're fairly even, I'd say.
I just think that Arsenal's defence is so much better than Bayern's.
I agree, but I also do think that like it doesn't take that much.
And yeah, it's a couple of, Hurricane.
It doesn't take that much. Like, you need, like, Saliba had a terrible game in the second leg against Porto. So did Saka, by the way. Now, it's unlikely both of those guys have like some of their worst games ever for the club again. But I think Arsenal will get chances. And the question is, do they put them away early? If they put them away early, especially in the first leg, because the first leg is actually the X factor here.
Mm-hmm.
So the first leg is at the Emirates, and there will be no Bayern fans there. Like, they've been banned because they threw flares on the pitch against Lazio. So Arsenal are going to have 60,000 fans, not a single Bayern fan-ish, you know, in the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to kind of think, we need to run up the score in this game. And the advantage they might have against Bayern is, I don't think Bayern are going to come there and say, keep it tight, go home with a draw, or like, you know, a result that's like within a goal and we will do them at the Allianz. I think Bayern are going to be like, we're Bayern Munich, we're going to go and try and win this game.
But I think that's what lends itself to Arsenal winning this tie.
No, I agree. And also, I think that like Arsenal's press is much more aggressive than any other German side. Like, no team in Germany has a PPDA, you know, which is like a measurement of how often they attempt a defensive action, as low as Arsenal's. Arsenal attempt a defensive action every 9 passes. So if they were in Germany, they'd be the most aggressive pressing side. And they're also a pressing side in a higher quality league. You know what I mean? So, like, they're not pressing like Freiburg. They're pressing like Brighton. Much higher quality players. And Bayern's weakness this season really has been like their build up from the back. And they have some clown shoes players back there. Now, I think, you know, they'll presumably play Kim in this game, but they might not. Mm-hmm. And I just look at their back line and I think Arsenal's back line has got to deal with like some elite players. Like, it's got to deal with Kane. It's got to deal with Sané. It's got to deal with Musiala. That's going to be a hard job. But the Arsenal attack is like no slouch either. And Bayern's defensive unit is just worse. Like, not least because they don't have a Rice in front of them. So I think that's kind of interesting. I think that's actually a really... On paper, you're never going to say like, oh, we're just going to like beat this elite opponent. Arsenal could easily lose this. And like, you know, Bayern score 2 of their first 3 shots just because sometimes that freakish stuff happens and they end up winning like 3-1 and they just like waltz through. That could totally happen. So I'm not like downplaying that, or there's a red card or whatever it is. But everything for this matchup that Arsenal could want to be in their favour is in their favour. Even injuries, they've got like guys coming back from injury at about the right time. Like, we don't like to talk about him, you know, but I'm sure that Arteta will be thinking, if I want to overpower them in the middle of the park, I can play Rice and Partey. You know, Bayern do not have a deep kind of like defensive midfield zone. They just don't. I'd say, you know, Arsenal do have those options. Bayern have experience on their side. You can't deny that. I was looking at this, and among the Arsenal squad, as far as I can tell, only Havertz, Jorginho, Partey, Jesus and Zinchenko have ever played in the Champions League deeper than the round of 16, whereas pretty much all the Bayern squad has. But I just think Arsenal have got a much better defence in a much better league. They've got a much better press in a much better league. They have lots of ways they can hurt teams. And I don't think that Bayern have a style or a system which is a particular problem for Arsenal. I think if Bayern go through over these 2 legs, it'll be because of individual performances. It'll be because like Musiala's had a game, or because Kane has just like bodied like Saliba or something. Like, that's how I see it happening. I don't see it happening because like Bayern have like tactically outmatched Arsenal, or because like their Arsenal's defence just can't stand up at this level.
Yeah, that just doesn't seem plausible to me. Across 180 minutes, they're not going to outplay Arsenal.
Yeah, and it might come down to who's better in the home leg. You know, and I just think that there is some pressure on Arsenal. This is the one bit of pressure on Arsenal, which is in that first leg. They're going to be thinking, no Bayern fans, home fixture, we're going to the Allianz after this. We kind of want to win by more than a goal.
I mean, that will be a good, because I do think this Arsenal team are really genuinely very, very good. If they go away, if they have to go away to Bayern and get a result, even just a 1-goal result, I think that's a huge test of how good this team actually is.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's a result that they very feasibly should and could get, like, if that's a scenario present itself. But feasibly and theoretically, like, being expected to do that and going and doing that are two very, very different things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think this is interesting. I think these will be good games as well. I think they'll be quite open.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I don't know, are you being like a little bit more conservative because you're an Arsenal fan and it's a hope that kills you?
Yeah, definitely. I just find it very hard to predict Arsenal to win games.
Yeah. For me, I'm a lot more bullish on Arsenal than you've been on this podcast so far.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you play these 2 legs 10 times, Arsenal win 7 of them, maybe 8.
Wow, Jesus.
Yeah.
The thing is, I just think like...
I just do not read Bayern's defence. Like, if United can score 3 past them, fucking anybody can.
And Gala really troubled them as well. Like, yeah, and they haven't really shown much sign of improvement. I agree. Yeah. I agree on all this stuff. I just think, you know, people are like, over 2 legs, the best team's going to win. And like, often that's true. But also over 2 legs, like sometimes one team just like puts one in from 25 yards, the game opens up, you get a second goal and that's it. Like it can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
I think actually, you know, an interesting game, Arsenal go away to Man City on the 31st of March.
Mm-hmm.
so like 10 days before this game. That will be interesting. That will be very interesting to see how Arsenal do there. Because if Arsenal's defence, even if they lose, if Arsenal's defence plays well and they can stand up to Manchester City in that game, I think we'll have to kind of say, okay, like if this defence can stand up to what I think is still probably the best team in the world, then maybe we get a little bit more bullish on them against Bayern Munich, who are not as good as Manchester City, not in any phase of the game. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird to be in this situation where we're like, are we favouring Arsenal to win against Bayern Munich and go to the semi-finals of the Champions League? If they go through that game, I mean, when you say if they go to the Allianz and they need a result, that's a huge test to them. It is. But it also means that if they come through that test, that Arsenal squad is going to start to think, oh, we can do this. Like, and we can also, seriously do this.
It will, based on the balance of probabilities, likely be Manchester City waiting for them in the semi-final, which is a complete leveler. English club versus English club. Like, that's a complete leveler in the Champions
League.
Yeah,
agreed. And depending what,
so more,
what your
so
results
much more I don't know why, but it's so much more difficult to predict than if they got drawn against Madrid.
There's just, like, so much bound up in it, isn't there? Yeah. And I think, you know, also, depending on what the result has been at the Etihad, like, if Arsenal get slapped that game, and Arsenal manage to get past Bayern Munich.
The one in the league?
Like, say they get slapped that game and they go like, then they'll be concentrating more on the Champions League, but they'll also be like, shit, like, can we do Man City over two legs? Whereas if they go to like the Etihad and like draw, they'll be like, we won at home, we drew away.
If this was like, Champions League, we'd be through.
Yeah, we can like have these guys. So I think these matches are going to, they're going to be formative for this team. You know, even if this team goes out, if they get through to this stage again next year, then you'd be like, oh, they're going to be a little bit stronger. It would be kind of amazing if they went all the way. I just find it hard to believe that a young squad like this would. But again, you know, like someone like Rice just puts in like a man of the match performance, and that's your difference. Like, we are at that point now in the Champions League. Somebody has two great games. Like, N'Golo Kanté basically did it when Chelsea won the Champions League. N'Golo Kanté came back for the knockout stages, was fucking unbelievable, and they won the Champions League. So, okay, should we move on to the final fixture then? Because, as you say, this was one that people kind of thought of as the final. Though, again, I've got to say, like, I know people don't like it, or they'll just say it's because I'm an Arsenal fan or whatever. I do think the number, like the one and two teams in the world, I do think it's Manchester City and Arsenal. But Real Madrid, Man City.
Yeah.
Champions League quarterfinal. I think a lot of people would probably say whoever wins this game should be favoured. Especially if Bayern beat Arsenal. If Bayern beat Arsenal, then I'd be like, whoever wins out of Real Madrid, Man City should win this competition.
Yeah, it's, they're basically going to face whoever wins out of Barcelona and PSG in the final. Mm-hmm. And they're going to beat them quite comfortably, basically.
Well, okay.
I would imagine. But I think, while I agree with you that Arsenal are probably the second best team in this competition, I think Real Madrid came into this as the second most favoured team in terms of whoever creates these probabilities. Sure. Yeah, and it wasn't until the draw that they dropped down to third. And we've obviously spoken a lot about City recently because they are just an ever-present fucking behemoth. So they are definitely favourites. I don't think there's a question that Manchester City are favourites. But Real Madrid, in my opinion, are actually pretty decent. Like, this season, they've lost twice in 40 games. Both of which, ironically, do Atletico Madrid. They're like, in all competitions this season, they're 32-7-2, which is an impressive return. But like many of the teams, like PSG, like Barcelona, like Bayern Munich, they have had issues defensively. They are questionable defensively. And while they've only lost twice this year, they have rode their luck quite a lot. Because in 15 games this season in the Champions League and the league, Madrid's opponents have been within half an XG or better. So basically, they've either incredibly narrow XG margins or Madrid have lost on XG. Across those 15 games, they won 11 and drawn 3 and lost just one. So those games, their underlying numbers, one, could have changed on a single moment, or their underlying numbers indicate that they should have lost that game. And that's happened quite regularly this season. And, you know, that isn't that shocking because of the amount of like late winners that Bellingham scored early on in the season. And it's just, for me, this is one of the biggest questions about Madrid. Similar, again, to, it's actually quite a similar narrative to a lot of the teams, is that they have a pretty good attack, and they have some really, really amazing attacking players, but their defence has been pretty, pretty middling. Like, their expected goals against this season in the Champions League are double, over double, what City's are. And only Dortmund and Atleti, who we have both openly said are the two worst teams left in the competition, have given up more expected goals against in the Champions League this season. Also, in terms of the eye test, in terms of how they played in the previous round, they fucking scraped past Leipzig. Like, they made it really hard work. And over the two legs, they actually lost on XG by 2.2 to 2.4. But in the same breath, their XG diff per 90 is plus 0.9, which is the fourth best in the Champions League. And that's a very, very good thing, very, very good like metric to measure teams by, and that is a very, very healthy metric. And it is kind of, I was kind of shocked that it was that big, considering how bad they were against Leipzig. But to put that into context, City's is 2.04, which is obviously first, and it's double PSG in second, who are like 1.02. So while Madrid have had issues defensively, while Madrid made a fucking meal of their Leipzig two legs, while they may technically be the fourth best team in the Champions League based on expected goal diff per 90, City are just fucking miles better in pretty much every metric, and they're far better defensively as well. And kind of similar to the PSG Barcelona thing, across two legs, I just don't see how Madrid can have enough to do City. And in a single game, I can see it. But two legs, I find it really, really difficult to see. But I do think Madrid are decent. It's just that City are so good.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So I'm going to try and make more of a case for Real Madrid, but I think it's quite hard. Man City, okay, they played Leipzig in the groups, you know, and made lighter work of them than Real Madrid did. But other than that, it was a very easy group. They had Young Boys, they had Red Star Belgrade, they had Copenhagen in the knockout round. On the other hand, they've scored three goals in literally every Champions League game. They've played eight games in the Champions League this season. They've scored three goals in each one of them, which is kind of funny. But also, City have been good kind of like half, maybe more than half, like two-thirds of the time this season. And the rest of the time, they haven't been that impressive. And Haaland is obviously amazing. De Bruyne is obviously amazing. De Bruyne's injured again. I mean, I assume he'll be back. I assume he'll be back for the Arsenal game.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know for sure.
Yeah, he was left out of the Belgium squad. I assume that was precautionary for City.
I assume so. And I don't know. I do think that Real Madrid, if they want to sit deep and counter, they should be able to. And I've been saying this about this Real Madrid team all year, and they haven't done it. They haven't done it. And I think, in fairness, you know, in the Champions League, they're expected to be kind of the protagonists. And in the league, they're expected to take control of games. But this is a game where actually, this is like the one game of the season where they're kind of underdogs.
And they'll cede possession.
And if I were Ancelotti, I'd be like, we've got a bunch of incredibly athletic, intelligent midfielders. We've got a decent back line. It's not amazing, but it's good. And we've got some amazing, like, fast break players.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like Pep Guardiola's nightmare team to play against?
Literally, like that is a really, really interesting matchup because City have looked really vulnerable to counters this season. And on the flip side of that, Madrid have been pretty direct. Like they've been the most direct team in the Champions League this season. Like more direct than 30% more direct than any other team in the Champions League. Six of their goals have come from my direct attacks, more than any other team in the Champions League. While on the flip side, only Crystal Palace have conceded more counter-attack goals than City this season.
Let that sink really? In.
Only Palace have conceded more counter-attack goals in the Premier League than City this season. So this is kind of the if I were Ancelotti, this is a marriage of two styles, or of a clash of two styles. City don't want to be countered, or they struggle to deal with being countered. This is a game where you're not really expected to dominate in the same way that you dominate pretty much every other game, or you're at the expectation that you dominate every other game. And you're also having a huge amount of success, the most success in the competition, from being a little bit more direct and fast. Yeah. Like, this is how you do City, if I was Real Madrid, if I was Ancelotti. And Ancelotti is one of the... I rate him so highly, and he's one of the smartest managers out there. Surely this is at least on his radar, and if not, this surely is how he approaches this game. If I was him, this is how I approach this game.
Yeah, I find a way to put Kroos in at the base of midfield, and then
he's
put some combination.
He's been incredible this season.
Well, and I mean, he always does what he does.
Mm.
He never really defends, but he's he's the best progressive passer in the world, probably. He's unbelievable. And I've got two incredibly fast, dangerous wide men, and a guy who can essentially give you midfieldy kind of defensive output. He hasn't done this season, but I think he can in this game. While being a target man, while being a threat on the dribble, while being creative. Like, this is all stuff that Bellingham's done this season.
Yeah.
So my plan for this game would be cross at the base of midfield. We then put Bellingham plus some combination of Tchouaméni, Camavinga and Valverde around him. Probably Valverde if you want to play on the counter, but like the other two if you want to be super defensively solid. And then you're just like, we defend, we try and win the ball back, we give it to Tony, and Vinny and Rodrigo run. And yeah, that's the plan. And I think that's a pretty good plan. Like, yeah. I mean, there are other teams that could try a version of this. But I also think that Ancelotti's Real Madrid will be happier playing like this than kind of Real Madrid's of the past. I think they'll be okay playing that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that the, you know, the Vinny kind of inside forward thing that's happened, like you've got here that he's taking 6.5 fewer touches on the wing, you know, per game. So he's like playing much more centrally.
Yeah.
His shot distance from goal has, it's like 2 yards closer to goal. And as a result, it's crept up a couple of percentage points in XG per shot. Like this sort of thing.
He's also getting a full shot extra per 90 as well, since he's moved into that more central advanced role.
And this sort of thing is like, if he has space, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And City kind of have to give you space because of how they want to play. They can't really not give you space, because otherwise you're going to end up with like kind of a hybrid deep block, like high front line. Like, I mean, what are you going to do there? I also think, and this is the Man City thing as well, Man City for some seasons have been declining as a pressing side. They used to be as good a pressing side as Liverpool, just in a very different way. And each season they've become that less and less, and their talent has become less and less suited to that too. You know, because Haaland isn't a great presser, Grealish isn't a great presser, Doku is kind of new there and he'll work hard, but I don't think he's a particularly great presser. Like, De Bruyne is kind of older. Like, gradually this squad has become less of a high pressing side than it used to be. And that means that if you hold the ball against Man City, they're not as good at getting it back as they used to be. And Real Madrid, the one thing, and this is where I think I sort of line up with the people like you who are like, Real Madrid just own this tournament, is that Real Madrid just don't get scared. Like, they will hold the ball. Even you think about the Liverpool game last season where they went like 2 goals down? Was it last season? You know what I mean? And then like, maybe it was the year before. Yeah, you know, and then like Alisson made the mistake, like bounced the ball into like Benzema and like...
Oh, sure, yeah. But 2 seasons ago?
Yeah, and Vinny scored the goal. Like, and they just came back in the game. And by the end of the match, they were hooping. Like, they were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what happened in that game is like, they were a fucking mess. They were getting pressed to death. They went behind. And then they were just like, they shook it off and they just started holding the ball. And Liverpool were running at them, trying to press them. And they were just popping it around. And they were like, they were confident that they were like, if we pop it around for long enough, a space will open and we will attack and we will score. And they just did that. And if Man City do not have a good night with the press, Real Madrid will be able to pop the ball around and play it through them. Like, they can do that because they don't have panic thresholds, this team.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite an interesting matchup too. Like, what is it like when you have a super confident possession side against a team which is no longer an elite pressing team? You know, not to always bring it back to Arsenal, but I think about that game earlier in the season, the Arsenal City game, where City created like nothing. Mm-hmm. But most interestingly was like when Arsenal went ahead, everyone was like, here it comes. Man City are going to get the ball. They're going to have the ball for the remainder of this match. And Arsenal are going to be like, if Arsenal win it, it's going to be by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah.
And it just never came. Like, Arsenal just kept the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And City couldn't get it back off them. And partially that's a testament to, you know, like the possession side Arsenal have become. But it's also interesting that City weren't able to like force the errors in the way they had the previous season against Arsenal. So I'm intrigued to see what happens in that regard too. So I don't know. I look at City and I'm like, the fact that City are still favourites to win this tournament, you know, in like the predictions, despite being drawn against Real Madrid and on the same side of the draw as Arsenal and Bayern, is bananas. Like, that is a testament to how good they are. On the other hand, they are third in the Premier League, and I think kind of deservedly so. And I just think that this is not a matchup that they'll win. I think that this is a worse match. I know everyone said that last season, but I think last season that was somewhat based on like legacy view.
Yeah.
This season, I'd be much more bullish on Real Madrid. Not to the point that I'd predict a Real Madrid victory. I still think it's more likely City go through. But I can't see something happening to Real Madrid like happened to them last season, where they lost 4-0 at the Etihad.
4-0 second leg, yeah. I think
I just don't see it happening.
This is the worst draw that he could have gotten.
Like, interesting.
Who do you think would be a worse draw for them at this stage?
A little team called Arsenal Football Club, Pete.
I still think this is worse. I think this is worse because they need to get through them. And then they'll probably still face Arsenal.
I'm joking.
The draw as a total is like not catastrophic, but it is the absolute worst case scenario for City. But I think this is the worst draw. They're looking at the eight teams. They're like, that we do not want to face Real Madrid because of everything you've just said and because of the kind of like legacy of Madrid and the fact that Madrid just don't. Like you said, they're just not scared of any team in the Champions League, or any team at all, but they're in the Champions League, they have this arrogance and this confidence that they're like, fucking do what you want, we're going to do what we like, we're Real Madrid. And yeah. I think that that's, to a degree, a leveler in terms of like feeling on the night, mood on the night, people, players, emotions on the night. It can fuck with your mind a bit, but I would love it if Real Madrid did them. I wish with every fiber of my being that Real Madrid do them, but I would love it as well as
an Arsenal fan. If we went through Bayern, I'd much rather play Real than City.
The sensible and kind of conscious feeling is that I just really can't see Madrid having enough across two legs, being defensively sound enough across two legs to shut down all of City's firepower and to stop like Haaland just being a battering ram while also unlocking a pretty solid defence with not a makeshift front line, but like they are still adapting to life without Benzema. You know, like you said, Bellingham's kind of been playing as a pseudo forward. Vinicius has kind of basically they've looked at their squad being like, we've lost a lot of goals. Vinicius is probably our best attacking player. Let's get him closer to goal, get him more shots, and get him involved more, which makes sense in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really hope it's Real Madrid.
And okay, it wouldn't. Okay,
do you want to do all four predictions?
Give me your predictions.
Right. So, from top to bottom, what do we start with? We started with Atletico Dortmund. Atletico, I think that's probably the easiest of the decisions.
Same. Atleti.
PSG Barcelona. I'm going to take a punt on this and I'm going to say Barcelona.
I'm going to go PSG.
Yeah. PSG's a sensible one, but I just have a feeling about that one. I don't know why. That press and the amount of shots that PSG are leaking, I can maybe see that one going that way. Arsenal Bayern, I think reasonably comfortably Arsenal. I just think Bayern's defence is not it. I think two goal margin across two legs. Bayern.
Fucking hell.
What are you saying?
I just can't predict us to win that game. But on the other hand, I just think, well, obviously I can. I am going to predict Arsenal to win that game. I mean, I fully expect that despite all the caveats we've given, people will be like, you fucking predicted Arsenal to win the game if we lose. But everything suggests that Arsenal should be the favourites, if marginally so.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to go Arsenal.
And then
City. I'm going City.
I'm also going to go City. I think it'll be close after the first leg. I think the second leg being at the Etihad will be the same as last year. No, I don't think it'll be the 4-0 like last year, but I think Madrid having to go to the Etihad and get a result, it's a big ask.
Yeah, agreed. Damn. And then do you have a final prediction? PSG City.
Barcelona Arsenal.
What?
mainly because I just don't want to fucking pitch City in the final.
That would be mental.
And I've went out on a limb and said that I just have a feeling that Barca will beat PSG. And then we've obviously already said that whoever wins that tie pretty much wins the semi-final.
God, that's a cursed final. How dare Bayern be there? Yeah. Barcelona be there, rather. Okay, right. Well, that's very stressful. Let's move on to the burn book. Okay, burn book time. This week, I think we should start with... what's going into the burn book? What's going into the burn book? A lot of things have annoyed me this week, Pete. A lot of things. But a lot of them are very small. You know, just things have popped into my head and I think, I hate that. Like homeschooling. What the fuck's up with homeschooling? Stupid. Yeah.
Ironically, one of my small ones that was added to my list was mouth breathers.
Oh, no, but the mouth breathers are fucking...
Insane.
I do not understand this behavior. You know, people who pull their dogs along when their dogs are shitting. I think one, it seems cruel. Two, it just makes the problem worse.
Yeah. Looking on the list that I have in my notes, one that's been there obviously for a while because it's quite up at the top. It just says young people. No idea when that's from, but
that could be anything.
But Yeah, that could literally have been from any time. I reckon that's been there for like a year.
I have old people on mine.
Yeah, I argue we could just put people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because people in the middle aren't great either. Yeah. A thing that's annoyed me though today is I was just like, the weather's getting warmer and it always produces, as soon as anyone's like tweeting or talking about the weather,
yeah,
a bunch of fucking Americans appear who start talking about Fahrenheit.
What?
Like, they start talking about like why Fahrenheit's better than Celsius.
Oh, right, okay.
They're like, how am I meant to know like what 25 degrees is? Like, well, because you learn what it means.
Yeah.
Like, Americans basically always make the argument that Fahrenheit is better than Celsius, even though objectively, like, they're just like arbitrary systems. Like, in my opinion, neither one is better or worse. I'm used to Celsius. I prefer Celsius because I'm used to it. Like, it's not intrinsically better, whereas Americans seem to believe Fahrenheit's intrinsically better because they're like, well, zero is like too cold and 100 is too hot, and that's how you know it. And you're like, but also when people are like, the weather's nice outside, they're like, oh, it's 65 outside or something. You're like, what the fuck does that mean? Like that means nothing to me because I don't know the system. But they all talk about it like they're like, oh, it's so intuitive. You're like, it's not intuitive. Like in the old days, people used to say like, oh, Macs are so much more intuitive than PCs or something. Like, it's not intuitive. You've just learned to use it, and so therefore you think it's more natural. It's not. I find this absolutely moronic, this conversation. It's just a totally arbitrary system. And like, I'm sorry, America, but you use Fahrenheit. You use the imperial system. Get a fucking grip. Get into the future. Like, I find this conversation like stultifying. And broadly, I do think that there's this thing that goes on, which people are like, the thing with which I am familiar is better than the things with which I am not familiar.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
But also, it's not difficult to like navigate, because say it's kind of the exact same thing as somebody giving you a price of something in yen or like Swedish krona.
Yes, what do you do? Exactly. You
go, I'm going to Google the exchange rate and change it to the currency that I'm comfortable with so I can then gauge how much money that actually is. Exact same concept. It's not difficult to do.
Exactly. Because if it were more intuitive, then when you said to an American, oh, it's 65 degrees outside, they'd be like, oh, great, or whatever. You know, they'd be like, I don't know if that's good. They'd be like, I know exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. But you say to somebody, you know, in the UK, oh, it's 20 degrees outside, and they'd be like, Jesus Christ, like, what does that mean? Like, oh my God, is that warm? Is that cold?
Yeah.
That's not the case. People know exactly what 20 degrees feels like because they're used to it. They know what it means. Like, it's just something that you're used to. So I just find this thing like very, very silly. And I think this happens all the time. You know, like, you know, the other one is like the, you know, that there was that whole trend about like kind of white people don't season their food that's kind of gone around on the internet for years.
Yeah.
But it's kind of now turned into Americans saying to everybody, you don't season your food. Like, and they don't seem to realize that lots of foods are properly seasoned with like salt and pepper, and you don't need to put like,
it doesn't need to change color,
barbecue sauce and cayenne powder on everything. Like, the fact that you can't taste things is not a point in your favor. And it reminds me of back in the Football Daily days when people would sometimes go Fernando's on Friday.
I hated this.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
No, go on. Like,
no, I don't know if this is where you're going, but it really triggered like a suppressed memory in me there, that every Friday, everybody got excited about going to Nando's and spending like 16 quid on lunch. I was like, Nando's is basically glorified fast food. It's chicken and chips. What's so big about this? You're going and you're getting like spicy rice and macho peas and some chicken thighs, and you spent 16 quid and you're like super excited about it. This is not like, you could go and spend 16 quid in a restaurant and get a main for lunch, and it'd be far better and far nicer. But this like folklore that Nando's is just incredible. I was like, it's literally just chicken with sauce and some form of carb.
Yeah. It's
fine. It's not bad.
And then the sauce becomes this like competitive thing where people are just like,
yeah, with their,
oh, does
level?
This person have the medium? Yeah. I have the extra hot. It's just like, congratulations. Like, you don't have a very good palate. Like, yeah. I'm not claiming I do, but I also am not just like, I like this thing spicy and therefore what? I'm more of a man. Yeah. And I am genuinely a snob about the people who get like the peri peri salt on their chips at Nando's, which is disgusting.
Okay.
It is a too salty powder. No one wants a powdery texture. It's revolting. And like, look, I love salt to it like it's a problem. Yeah. I make things far too salty. I don't think I taste particularly well, to be honest. But like, I really love salt on things. Like, I put loads and loads of salt on things. My wife's always like, stop putting so much salt. But I find the peri peri salt they put on their chips to be like way too much. Like, it's horrible. And yet, I would see people get the extra hot sauce, they get the peri peri salt, and I was just like, what are we doing here? Like, we're just making some weird point. I find that stupid, and I don't think that it's like something to be proud of. I think it's just like the way you like stuff. Sure, I kind of think you're a moron for liking it that way, but I allow you to like it that way.
Oh, that's very noble.
What I don't, yeah, I think it is. What I don't want is to get drawn into like a pissing competition about it, as if you're like, you know, my dad.
Yeah.
Just because you like it, I don't know, objectively more spicy than it's possible to enjoy. I don't know. I just don't get it. Stupid. Anyway, that was like a bunch of different things I rolled in there,
yeah,
but they all pissed me off. What are you
we started as a real scattergun approach there. I've just burned like...
We found a target though, didn't we?
I burned like three things before I even got to this. But what I'm putting in the burn book this week is the bastardization of St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yes.
Because this really fucking annoyed me this week. Obviously, St. Patrick's Day happened on Sunday. And I'm not like a big...
Do you not mean St. Paddy's Day? That's always how you know. That's always how you know. Whenever anyone's like, it's St. Paddy's Day, you're like, j'accuse.
In the bin. In the fucking bin. Right. Well, we don't say St. George's Day, do we? Nobody says that. Why do we bastardize it to St. Paddy's Day? It's St. Patrick's Day. Speak appropriately. But that's one of the, I suppose that's one of the lesser annoyances. It's still a reasonably large grievance, but that's one of the lesser annoyances. So obviously St. Patrick's Day just happened on Sunday, and I don't celebrate that much really, but I do enjoy drinking. So I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go out. And I met a friend in London in an Irish bar. She's from home. And we had some drinks, and obviously the bar was like round, as expect. That's fine. Half the people there were wearing like leprechaun hats and green things and like little, like, you know, fascinators that were like top hats, and I was like, you're doing too much. Like, Irish people,
you're not in fucking Moulin Rouge.
Irish,
like,
people aren't this out.
Moulin Vert.
Irish people are not this out. We are not this outgoing. We come to a dark pub and we sit in the corner and we sit largely in silence and probably chat a little bit. We're measured. We're here to drink. We're not here to like.
Yeah, I've seen
up.
The Banshees of Inisherin. Yeah, it's just people being like,
that is literally all of Ireland outside of the city. I'm going to cut my fingers off. I'm going to cut a digit off if you try and speak to me again. But yeah, it was like, and it was just full of all this like St. Patrick's Day paraphernalia nonsense. I was like, right, fuck this. Like, can't be arsed, right? And finally got to the bar, ordered a pint of Guinness, and this bar was rammed, so like even standing space was at a premium, never mind sitting. And my friend was like an hour late because she got caught up on the tube. Like, she got literally stuck on a tube, you know, when it like there's an issue with the train and it stops in between two stations. Mm-hmm. So it can't even divert, you're just like on it until it's fixed. So she got fucked by one of them. So I was there for like an hour on my own, drinking and just kind of observing. Like, the United match was on, so I was watching that, but I was also just like observing people and just getting more and more annoyed. And it's kind of like, you know, when you buy a house, or like you rent a flat and you move into it, and when you first viewed it, it's like, oh, this is nice, I could see myself living here. But then the longer you stay there, you start to see more issues with it. You're like, that floorboard doesn't line up with that floorboard. There's a crack in the wall there. Oh, that paint's peeling. You know, the more you look about, because you live there, the more like shit you see. So it was kind of like that in this pub. And I started seeing a lot of like pockets of people. We'll call them, like Holden Caulfield, we'll call them phonies. So usually English or American. Probably weighted like 70% female to male of like glaring phonies. So there was this one, I'll focus on this one particular group. And it was these three women sitting at the bar in seats, taking up quite a lot of space at the bar, making it more difficult to order. And I'm fine with that as long as you're like drinking and you know, behaving appropriately in the bar. They all had pints of Guinness each and glasses of water. Fine, keep hydrated. That's cool. But it seems to me that they did the very St. Patrick's Day thing that people who don't like Guinness do on St. Patrick's Day, is where they go to a bar and they buy a Guinness, even though they know they don't like Guinness, just because it's St. Patrick's Day. And then they spend the next like 2 hours forcing down a pint of Guinness very, very slowly because it's St. Patrick's Day. So
David Beckham style.
After like an hour, I'd gone through like 3 pints, and I came back and I noticed him. And
oh, look at you. That's a real man.
every time I came back, they literally drank about 5 centimeters of their pint. They'd been there for over an hour and they were less than half a pint in. And I was like,
delicious anymore.
It's disgusting.
It gets worse. If you're not enjoying it, so at the beginning, you are not going to be enjoying it after an hour.
You can tell with Guinness, because when it's freshly poured, the head is like a cream colored. If it's been sitting too long,
and you've got that perfect,
the little dome.
You've got the perfect shamrock in the top put in the top.
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't come with all
Guinnesses.
That's
how you can tell it's fresh.
Yeah. But the longer it sits inside the glass, like when you're halfway down, the more brown the head goes and the smaller it gets and the thinner it gets. Sure. And that's when you tell that like that pint's been sitting there for ages. And they genuinely like stomach through this Guinness, like a single pint of Guinness, 568 milliliters of liquid. It took them like well over an hour each to finish. And I was like, what's the fucking point? You're not enjoying it. I'm not enjoying it. I'm like enraged watching you. I'm trying to watch a football, but I'm actually spending more time watching you not drink your drink. And you're sitting there chatting.
Insult your culture.
And like, I get that you're out for a good time. I have a good time. But one thing that's not having a good time is drinking a drink that you don't like. So stop pretending. Stop. My culture is not, it's not my culture.
Your costume.
Yeah. Like literally, but like 80% of that bar was just like drinking Guinness for the one day a year they drink it, and wearing something green because they're like, oh, it's fucking St. Patrick's, it's St. Paddy's Day. And none of them enjoyed it, because they don't, if they did enjoy it, they would drink Guinness all year round. And it was such a phony fucking piece of bullshit. It's St. Patrick's Day, it shouldn't be celebrated, it should be respected. You should sit in silence in a dimly lit pub and think about everything you regret in life. That is Irish.
Yeah.
That is Irish.
That's the most Irish thing you could do. Yeah. Like, remember when the country became canonically Catholic?
Yeah.
Thus ruining the country for the next nearly 2,000 years.
Love it.
Before they started to, like, pick shit up again.
Yeah.
Like, just very recently.
Just sit there in silence, like like a real person. This is not America.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is not America. This is not a holiday. This is like...
Same as the Fahrenheit thing, Pete. This is not America. That's all I'm saying.
This is not America.
I'm just saying the world isn't America. But, yeah. You know, it's just like, oh, I'm Irish. It's just like...
But no, St. Patrick's Day.
We get it. Your dad's a policeman.
Yeah.
Which is also not Irish. To be related to a copper. Okay. No, I think that's excellent. Like, because that's the thing that even annoys fucking me. And like, we've sat here on the podcast before, and I have drunk a pint of Guinness and I've enjoyed it.
Mm.
I don't drink pints. If I can drink a pint of Guinness, anyone should be able to. Like, I reckon my daughter could drink a pint of Guinness. If I told her not to drink a pint of Guinness, she'd fucking put it down immediately. Yeah. She'd absolutely nail it.
Get her in the boat team. Yeah.
You better believe that she'd be able to do it. All right, that's an excellent one. Okay, what's coming out of the burn? But right, I've got a couple of things here. Quick one, enjoying your nice stuff. I think I've touched on these sorts of things before, but enjoying your nice stuff. Today,
yeah,
I had like an hour and a half like Zoom call earlier with somebody. And normally I'd be like in a t-shirt and like joggers or whatever. If it's not like formal, I'd just be comfy around the house. But today I was still wearing my normal trousers, and I was wearing tassel loafers while I was on this call.
Interesting.
And admittedly, I'm trying to break in these loafers right now because they're annoying the piss out of me.
Where are they from?
I don't remember. I bought them in Spain. I bought them in Sevilla.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. I was in the market for some loafers, and then I said to Emma, I was like, it just so happens that next month I'm going to the home of leather shoemaking. So I'm going to buy some fucking oxblood tassel loafers.
Red?
Barely red. You know,
this is
like
so interesting because I've literally just bought red loafers. Like,
really?
They're called wine loafers. GH Bass ones with a little horse.
Lovely.
They arrive tomorrow. There's no tassel. But I do have a backup plan. The penny loafers, yeah.
Lovely.
The Weegians is sorry.
I had some Weegians, but I could never get them to... Anyway, let's not get into this. But I was just like, I want to wear loafers, but these are the loafers I have, and I need to break them in. And once I've broken them in, I know they'll be really comfortable, but they are... you have to buy them tight, right? Because they have to fit without laces.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm breaking them in a little bit. Yeah. Anyway,
size half size 9 usually.
Exactly. Yeah. So these are a European size 44,
mm-hmm.
and generally I'm like a 45.
Yeah.
So, though I think I might be, whatever. So anyway, like, I was wearing these today and I was just like, this is nice. Sometimes it's nice not to be like, okay, I'm going out, so I'm going to like put on a nice outfit and wear my nice clothes. But when I sit around the house, I'll dress like fucking shit.
Yeah.
And admittedly, I've got kids, so there's a limit to this. You know, like, I can't just like, I see people on Instagram who are like, yeah, I wore a suit today, like, just because I felt like it. And I was like, must be nice. If I wear a suit today.
To be childless.
Yeah. It must be nice to wear a fucking suit that no child is going to vomit or draw.
Yeah.
That must be fucking great.
Yeah.
But I can't, because the suit that I wear today will be a different color suit tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because my child will fucking draw on it.
That is the behavior of somebody who's never been pissed on.
Yes, exactly. Though piss, not that bad. Sure. as these things go.
Well, it is if it's dry clean only, because then it's just expensive.
But tweed, historically, they harden tweed in piss, right?
Do they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if anything, like, it's extending the life of your tweed with your child's, believe me, highly concentrated piss. Because like you, children are very hit and miss with their hydration.
I've got tonic water right now, so I'm counting that as hydrating.
Is that entirely tonic water?
No, there's a good measure of gin in it.
Exactly. Okay. In the same way that I just finished my drink, which was like kind of a ranch water. So it was mostly soda water, but then it also had 3 shots of tequila, 2 shots of pineapple liqueur, and like half a bottle of lime juice in it.
in a Breville... in the Breville, like the blender shaker.
Yeah, I was like, I need it to be sealable. I can't be trusted taking this upstairs or downstairs. So yeah, anyway, like, I think that's a fun thing to do. Like, I am trying to wear my nice clothes more, and it's like, somebody pointed out to me that when you buy nice shit secondhand, you know, when you're like, oh, I bought this blazer or these trousers or whatever secondhand online, and they're in immaculate condition. What that might mean is someone bought it and then deemed it too nice to wear.
Yeah.
They were like, I've got to save it for a special occasion. Don't want to ruin it. That's fucking sad. I don't want anyone to buy my clothes when I die. And they're like, wow, nobody ever wore these clothes. You know, you're like, that's fucking stupid. So I think that's one thing that I'm really trying to get into at the moment. The other thing, which is just a quick one, is... watch the next thing on your list. Have a list of things that you want to watch.
Yeah, it's tough.
And watch the next one on your list.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're... admittedly, this is difficult because you have to use like Just Watch or whatever and find out where it's available. But the other night, I had some time to myself and I sat there and I fucked around trying to decide what to watch. And I actually wasted the evening doing it. And it was the first time in ages I'd done that. And I got back into watching films properly last year. As in, like, I've always watched quite a lot of films. But last year I watched, like... as I said, 150 films I hadn't seen before, plus obviously like dozens and dozens others that I had seen before. This year, I've only seen 30 films so far that I hadn't seen before. But mostly the way I was able to do it is that, like, when I had time to watch a film, I just looked at the next film on my list, found it, rented it, and watched it.
Yeah.
Rather than fucking about being like, am I in the mood for that? Am I going to like it? I'd like something lighter today, you know, blah, 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 blah. That leads to you wasting your time.
Yeah, I'm biased.
The best thing is just to have a list, and the next thing on your list, you're just like, that is what I'm watching. And just immediately find it and start watching it, and don't worry about whether it's the right thing. And I promise you'll watch a lot more stuff, and you'll have fewer evenings that you feel you wasted wondering whether you should watch the right thing. And normally, you know, if you're really not in the mood after half an hour, just turn it off and watch it the next day. Like, that's fine. But often you'll find you are in the mood because a good film will draw you in. So that's my recommendation. If you want to waste less time and you want to watch more stuff, don't sit around and think, oh, you know, I'd really like to see X film that I've never seen before, but it's like 3 hours long, or, oh, but it costs like £3 to rent or whatever. Just fucking rent it and watch it. And honestly, like, if there's a film that you're embarrassed you haven't seen, you are at most 4 hours away from having seen that film. You could start it now, and in 2 hours' time, you've seen that film, and you don't have to be embarrassed that you haven't seen it anymore. And normally it's like 2 hours and probably like a couple of quid in a rental away. So, like, just rent it and watch it.
So some of the great ones I haven't watched are like, I go to watch them and then you see that they're like 3.5 hours long, and you're like, that's a big commitment.
Okay, but in that case, I suggest approaching it as a, like, take all the pressure off yourself to try and watch it in one go.
Well, and just split it up.
And see it as... installments. So like last year I was just like, I want to watch Lawrence of Arabia.
I think there is a website for that that like gives you
Oh, or, good breakpoints.
Yeah.
That's like good.
You can put in any film that's in this database and it'll give you like optimal ways to break it up.
But lots of great long films used to have an interlude anyway. Like they'd have an interval in the middle. So it's not like crazy to do it. It's not like sacrilege. And it's better to watch it with those breaks than not watch it at all. Mm. Last year I was like, I want to watch Lawrence of Arabia. I'd always had the same thing. I was just like, when the fuck am I going to watch this fucking 4-hour film?
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what? Pressure off. I'm going to watch it in 4 1-hour installments.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up watching it, I think, in like 3 installments because I was enjoying it so much. And at the end of each installment, I was like, I kind of want to watch more.
Yeah.
Whereas if I tried to watch it all in one go, one, I just don't think I'd have been able to with work, baby, blah, 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 blah. But also you just beat yourself up and you're just like...
you just want to get through it. You're like, all right, come on.
Exactly. Right, I think it's much, much better when you're just like, watch an hour, watch an hour, watch an hour. What I wouldn't do is break it up into smaller parts. So if you start watching 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, sometimes you get to the end of a week and you're like, I feel like that film was like 8 hours long because I was just watching it in bits and pieces. Watch it in like decent sized blocks, but just treat it as like 4 episodes of a TV show. You wouldn't bat an eyelid at watching like 4 episodes of like Succession. It's fine. Just do the same thing. Just do the same thing. It's totally okay. So that's my recommendation. And honestly, everybody has had the regret when you get to the end of the evening and you're like, I spent this whole fucking evening scrolling. And I'm sorry, but you will never find something you want to watch scrolling through Netflix. It never happens.
That or you just stick on something you've watched 1,000 times because it's easy.
There's time for that. But also...
Yeah, but if you're actively looking for something and then you're like, I give up, I'll just stick on the American Office or whatever.
But you have stuff in like... You have stuff in your Netflix queue. Everybody has their Netflix queue that no one ever uses, right? Like, I have stuff on it, but okay, I never go to it.
Watched. Yeah.
I never go to it and just watch the next thing on it.
Mm.
I have the girl with the dragon tattoo on there all the time, and I always watch that. But, like, instead of thinking, oh, you know, what am I going to watch today? Just go to your, like, just go to your Netflix queue and be like, oh, what have I got on here? I don't know. Like... High Flying Bird, the Soderbergh movie that I never got round to watching properly. That's on my Netflix queue right now. So if I was at a loss tonight, I could be like, yeah, I'm just going to like watch High Flying Bird. It's a Soderbergh movie. Like, it's going to be cool. It's got Andre Holland in it.
I started doing it as a note on my phone, like tracking the TV shows and shows that we are watching and want to watch.
Okay.
And it was like the easiest thing ever. But then I stopped doing it because like the upkeep, I was like, oh, I just fell away from it. And now we're back into this like mindless scrolling.
Yeah. Don't do it. Like next time go like have your list, go through your list a little bit in advance if you can. You know, like when you're on a train, look through the list of stuff that you want to watch and just watch like 5 of the things on there. Go and just watch and like look up 5 of the things on there and see which platform it is and just write it next to it. So if I go to my list on my phone, like I have a list of probably 100 movies on here that I want to watch.
That's a lot.
And some of them just have in brackets next to it, like Disney Plus.
Oh, sure. Wait, is this a note or is this on just watch?
This is a note.
All right. Oh, so you've typed out 100 movies and that's...
Well, you know, not in one go, but I just had them. Sure. So like, okay, this film, it's available on Sky.
Yeah.
And if it's available on Sky to rent, it's going to be like £3. So, you know, so I just put stuff like that on there. And then when the time comes... I don't have to worry about where it is or about finding it. I'm like, am I willing to spend £3 on it? Yes, I'm willing to spend £3 on a film. So sure. that's just what I do. And then I just go for the next thing. The most annoying thing is the ones on here that are nowhere to be streamed. That's frustrating. But there's always something else that is. So that is my recommendation. I just think everybody wastes their life scrolling. It's fucking boring. Everyone gets annoyed with it. So find a way around it. And that's my way around it. What are you taking out of the burn book?
What I'm taking out of the burn book is actually, or has actually been heavily influenced by yourself.
Yes.
Unknowingly. So recently posted on Instagram, I can't remember what the caption was, I can't remember what the topic was, but there were a couple of fits in there, one of which I commented on, saying it was very, very grumpycore.
Yeah.
And
this was the Universal Works pink cardigan that I tried on.
Yeah, yes. Was it pink? Because it looked kind of beigey in the
pink.
Light.
It's pink.
I actually respect it even more that it's pink.
Thank you.
But it made me revisit my 2024 like picks, one of which was grumpycore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I spoke so highly of like knits and grumpycore and how I think that's going to be like a big part of 2024, but they never like actioned it myself. So literally... Within like 3 days, I just went, I saw that Arket had like a 25% sale and I just went and bought like two really nice cardigans because
nice.
A cardigan is a clothing item that I like, I respect and I appreciate, but I just never really, I just don't have one in my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. I've had them previously, but for years it's just not really been a thing that has been part of my like outfit rotation. So I went and I bought two, and let me tell you, Patrick, I've only worn one so far because this is literally last week. I've worn one. Not only do I feel an absolute $1 million in it, but I'm struggling to think or to remember of a piece of clothing that I've gotten more compliments for in a day.
Really?
Yeah. Like just from going to work in it, there was like seven different people being like, I really like that. Would you get that? Oh, honestly. And you know when you just put something on? This is just like a... So it's kind of like a mix between a cardigan and a kind of work jacket. So there's no pockets mm-hmm. in it. It's just like buttoned up whole way up to the top and with a like a kind of like a polo neck collar.
Okay.
So kind of in between a shirt. It's like a shirt cardigan. The other one's a more traditional cardigan. Mm-hmm. But really good quality, nice wool, tight knit, and a nice like kind of light brown. I know you're a big fan of brown. Brown's something that doesn't feature that often in my wardrobe. So it was a nice addition. And yeah, just wore it with like wide leg dickies. And
yes.
It just wore wide leg dickies and off-white Converse. Like the 70s Converse.
Yeah, the
and it just worked.
Paper. Isn't it paper?
Yeah,
the colorway?
Well, it was like, yeah, they're kind of like, it's in between white and cream. Mm. And they're a little bit beaten up. I've actually got a box fresh pair that I'm yet to transition to. I'm waiting for the weather to clear up a bit.
Oh, but they look so good when they're beaten up, in my opinion.
I think I'll rotate the two. Okay. I won't shuck out the beaten up pair, but mm-hmm. it'll be appropriate for whatever. It'll be a fit by fit basis. But I don't remember the last single item of clothing I put on, and I was like, outside of actually my wedding suit, which I got made for quite a lot of money, which I literally picked up 2 days ago.
Oh shit, I'm really excited.
I don't remember, it's like a single garment that I put on and was like, this fucking slaps. And this brown cardigan just hit all of that on it and got a lot of compliments for it. And I was like, you know what, fucking big up cardigans, because I think they're definitely coming back in, but they're one of the forgotten knits. Everybody goes for the crew neck, you know, never go for a v-neck.
Yeah,
never go for V-neck.
V-neck under any circumstances.
Do you remember like the late 2000s where like deep V's were a thing?
Look, we all made some regrettable experiments, but like, what are you gonna do?
big up cardigans, and it was literally a fairly impulsive move born out of your Instagram post. So congratulations, you successfully influenced me.
Yes, thank you. Good. Well, look, cardigans are great, and I just think that like layering is great.
Mm.
And the cardigan is such an easy way to layer in a slouchy manner that you don't have to take it off when you go inside.
Yeah.
It kind of allows you as well to have a bit more of a statement piece.
Mm.
You know? Like, I'm not saying they all have to be like that. Like, I have two cardigans and one is just like an M&S one in 100% merino wool, obviously. That's just like brownish. And the other is like more of a kind of mustard, and it's from Beams.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just a bit more fun than just throwing on like a sweater.
It's a bit different. Like I wear a lot of work shirts, but I find they're very like common. You know, like worker chore jackets or corduroy overshirts. My wardrobe's full of overshirts, and it was just a really nice change, and it was just different. And I kind of feel
there's something about an overshirt that when you button it up, you feel like you work for like FHM. Mm. You know what I'm saying? You know,
what,
you
look like one of those hard. Like,
you look like one of those kind of like East London guys, or you know those try hard football journalists. You know, the ones who always try and sound cool, like they're kind of like a bit of a geezer, where they're like, yeah, you know, like back in the day, I used to go to the Hacienda or whatever, and you're like, you're fucking uncool.
Yeah,
and the fact that you have an overshirt from A Day's March doesn't change my fucking opinion about you that you're a dweeb.
Your Mundial tote bag isn't helping this either.
Yeah, like we get it. You've heard of Percival. Like you're not fucking cool.
Go speak to your kids that you don't see enough.
Well, their mums turn me against them. She's a primo, bitch. Okay. Right, kind of weird end to the episode. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Let us know what you think of our predictions for the Champions League. I mean, people are always really polite. We have had some questions, which I think we will get to at some stage as well. So we thank you for those. Continue to send them in, please. Come on, man. Business end of the season. I mean, I do think after this international break, it's like straight shot to the end of the season.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this feels like a very annoying break in what promises to be an insane run-in that could end up in basically anybody winning major silverware. So get excited, everyone. Thank you very much. We'll catch you next time, and we'll see a load of you over on the subscription side. Bye-bye.